What? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's what I wanted to bring it from a deeper side. But now, there's another thing as far as about to solve it, I think. I'm not saying I answer for everything. I'm trying to at least give a direction. No, again, I'm trying to give a little bit of idea to it. As far as what you're asking, as far as Paro's freedom of what's this chizuk kalev? Okay. The what do you call it? All the parshim talk about that. Ramban of Vanichatek Libo, Ramban, they all pretty much in similar direction is that when someone does something wrong, right, there's always a reason that he has. The question, in a nutshell, what most parshim say, not that God hardens his heart. What does God do? God always, he strengthens his heart to make a bad decision. He's always going to bring something that will leave Paro, oh, maybe I have another chance. Remember, Paro sees that there was a rest from the plague, and he hardens his heart. He makes his own decision. But what does God do? God gives enough of an opening that'll make a bad, he doesn't make a bad decision for him. Paro makes his own, the exact example we read from Parsha B'Shalach. What does God do? God tells Moshe, do a maneuver. He doesn't tell Paro to change his mind, but he does it so that hopefully Paro will change his mind. But Paro changes his mind on his own. God creates a situation where he's testing Paro. Now Paro, because he's a wicked person, makes the wrong decisions. And God opens up the derech for Hashem to flow into. But they make their own decision. God doesn't decide for Paro. God gives him strength to make a stupid decision. But the punishment's coming because he did something bad in the first place. He's not punishing him for no reason. Paro's corrupt, he's mean, everything he does is bad. And God sets him up. And the people, by what God does, we show what God does to wicked tyrants. Yeah. But that decision was unethical. Those, yeah. Okay. In general, it's difficult that what it means when. Wait. He's not. The way I understand, I think the way the Ramban explained it. But about Chizuk HaLev, it's not that he decides for him. It's that he leaves him leeway to make a mistake.
Right, but he doesn't allow the other elements of his personality or the other facets of his personality to
But it's still, it's Paro's own decision to chase them. But God sets up a situation where that'll entice them to make a bad decision. But he still makes his own bad decision. You're saying, why can't God be nicer to Paro? Because he has a bone to pick with Paro. And we have a lesson to teach all generations about future Paros. That's one pirush. I'm saying a different pirush. I'm saying what God does. Paro's a bad guy, but God always gives him a little string so that. But he makes his own decision to take that little, and change his mind all the time. Yeah, but that's his own decision not to do it. You're going in psychology with kids. You know, who to blame when you have a criminal? It's not his fault he killed somebody. He watched TV when he was a little kid, or you know he was undernourished. He ate McDonald's instead of yeah. Sure, but it doesn't. Yeah.
But you don't find that.
All you find is being mean. That's all.
All you find is you made these very equal directions. To some extent, there might be a bit of
Mount Hebron, you know, who, in a sense, also went through this choose. Even at the end of the war, when he was losing the war, and he needed all this war material, in a certain sense, God hardened his heart that he used it to kill Jews instead of, in a sense, to win the hatred at some point takes over to such an extent that the personality is possessed, in a certain sense.
Okay. And I'm trying, one other little point, and then I'll take questions. It's late already. One other little question, and then we'll do a quick summary, then we'll take questions. On the question of why the Jews have to suffer through this, the suffering, so Sforno makes, I didn't give you Sforno because it's a little long, but you can look it on your own later on. Sforno says over and over again in his introduction to Sefer Shemot, and it's, just look at his commentary in the first chapter. He says the reason for that was that parech. Means the intense hardship was because the Jews didn't do tshuva. He brings psukim from Yechezkel. It takes half hour to do that properly, but because the Jewish people, God expected them to do tshuva, dumping Egyptian culture, their ways, following God, ready to God, right? And God called upon them to do it, and they didn't listen. What's called the 49 levels of tumah they were in, they didn't do that, and it's because of that that God had it to intensify their slavery, to learn their lesson. The source is Yechezkel chapter 20, and every Sforno in chapter 1 in Shemot, from his introduction. He's saying that when God said that you're going to be enslaved by another nation, he didn't say how severe that servitude would be, and how bad it was. He says that the framework of being mistreated by another nation, that was what he called. That was bound to happen. How intense and severe that punishment had to be was a function of our deeds and not readiness to be redeemed. And that, and all the Tochot is what Tochot talks about in Jewish history. That God says, if we're not doing our job for what He chose us for, He'll punish us over and over again until we recognize our purpose and do our job properly. So let me just summarize more quickly, and then I'll take questions. That way, in case people have to leave, they can leave. But I try to show you again. I don't claim I have the answer for everything. And I just wanted to bring up the classic problems that come up when you study the Exodus, lying, stealing, hardening hearts and deceiving, etc. like that. And at least try to show first by seeing the text what the story is and what the background is. First of all, what the text shows, because it's not what everyone thinks it is. Some people knew it before, and I think that was from a textual point. I hope that was fun. This thing with the real story of the Exodus is. Because the story is much better, the book is much better than the movie. You know that about it. It's a much more complicated plot. Okay, 1 second. And then, that was point number one. Point number two, I try to show that in the wider picture, right, you can understand that the lying isn't really lying. There's a logical reason for the lying, the double story. And the deceit, technically speaking, we can get out of it. Ethically speaking, no, it's back wages. Okay. Now, then going back to Brit Beit Haftarim, we can begin to understand why that it's not that God said Paro had to be something bad. God's saying it's bound to happen. And God wanted us to become a nation in that setup because the whole reason we're a nation is so Paro won't happen again. It desensitizes us. It's going through that for the sake of learning. Sometimes you have to go through difficult situations. It's like any parent tells a teenager, I'm punishing you because I love you. I know teenagers don't buy it. Their parents seem to buy it. But there's something to it. Amiso doesn't buy it, but God says it. But I'm saying that at least there's some value in that. And then, in order to fulfill, once we understand the purpose of Brit Beit Haftarim, that it could be that this double plan, the power to this whole setup, this whole charade kind of thing, It's a technical way for God to fulfill Rechush Gadol, which comes up every time. But one last little proof to that. Look at chapter 11. It's really cute. In Shemot chapter 11, it'll explain Sukkim, which also don't seem to make sense. Okay. For some reason, it's repeated over and over again. Chapter 11, very the beginning. V'yomer Hashem Moshe. Page 346. V'yomer Hashem Moshe, Od nega chad avia paro, amitzayim achrechen nishalach etzem, kishachok kalan garishit chamizah. One more plague, then I'll send you out. One more plague, and remember what I said, I'm gonna warn paro to let my people go. 970. Okay, yeah. Start from 970. Yeah. Remember, 6 days work, seventh day you rest. Okay. Start from Pasuk, top of the page, Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14. ויום השביעי שבת לה' אלוקיך לא תעשה כל מלאכה אתה ובנך ביתך עבדך ועמתך ושורך וחמך וכל בהמתך וגרך שבשורך. No one can do work. Everybody can do work. For what reason? Not כי ששת ימים עשה השם את השמים ואת הארץ. The reason in Shavuot. We have a different reason. למען ינוח עבדך ועמתך כמוך. Why do we have to give every, why do we have to rest? To allow our workers to rest. The purpose of Shabbat is to allow everyone, other people to rest. What's the next line? V'zachata ki eved hayita b'eretz Yisrael. Don't remember that God took you out of Egypt. Remember what? Remember that you were a slave in Egypt and you once suffered and you knew what it's like not to have rest. Don't do that to your servants. Don't treat them like dirt. And then next. And God took you out of Egypt. Misham b'yad chazaka b'zonotuya. Alkein tzivcha. Why did God take you out? In order to become a nation that will be different. So there's a social reason for Shabbat. As long as you're in Devarim, just to put a clincher on it, look in Parshat Re'eh. We're going to read that on Yom Tov coming up. Yeah, 8th Yom Tov, you read this. Israel, we don't. You guys do. 10:18. How'd you find that so fast? Okay. 10:18. Ted Zion. Remember Shemot Chodesh Aviv, Vesita Pesach, Vashem Elokecha? It's raining. Okay, 10:20 we need. Shavuot Chodesh Aviv. Then we have the laws of Shavuot. 10:22. The top of the Pasuk Tet. Verse 9 in chapter 16 in Devarim. Shiva Shavuot is Sporlach, remember that? Count 7 weeks from Pesach to Shavuot. We won't read all the agricultural stuff. Pasuk Yud Aleph. On Shavuot, the holiday of the harvest holiday, the wheat harvest. Now that you have your wheat harvest and you're giving your present to God, be happy in front of God. Who has to be happy? You. Who has to be happy? You, not just you and your family and your best friends. You and your servants and maidservants. And who else? And the poor rabbi, the Levite, who doesn't have a business, etc., who doesn't have a field and has to live on your masrot. And who else? Vager, the stranger. Vayatom, right, who doesn't have a field, who doesn't have land, Vamana, who doesn't have, Ashibi Kibecha. In other words, who has to be happy? You're naturally happy because it's your harvest. Make sure everyone else is happy. Don't keep your happiness to yourself. Share it with the others who don't have. V'makom asher yivchar Hashem, v'shekhen shvosham, v'sam pasik yivet, v'zachata ki eved hita b'mitzrayim. V'shamata lasot chukim eila. It's not to remember that God took you out of Egypt. Remember that you were a slave in Egypt. And therefore, remember what it's like to be at the bottom of the totem pole. So when you're on top, to treat people nicely. It's over and over again in Chumash. You follow? I took you out of Egypt. Remember, Anochi Hashem Asher Teitichem Eretz Mitzrayim Lot Lecha L'Elohim. I took you out of Egypt for this relationship, to be your God. My point is, I want to prove in these psukim that God put us through this whole experience and was planned from Brit Ben Abtarim to sensitize us as a nation. And that's why Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayv Adam Lirot Et Atzmo Kilu Hu Yatzam Mitzrayim. Every generation has to feel as though they went through, so that every generation should be sensitized. Yeah. Mean why we had to suffer to learn that? So look, yeah. Parsha Mishpatim, what to begin with? We come out of Egypt. We get the Ten Commandments. What's the first law? Ki tignav et ivri. What? Shei shanim yavav b'chulei. What are we doing? We have an eved. Treat him like a mensch. Later on in Parsha Mishpatim, v'ger lo tonev lo techad. And we have laws of avadim. What happens? In Hammurabi law, in all the other laws, what was the case of an eved? If an eved touched a citizen, he's dead. A citizen touched an eved, big deal. You follow? Now, again, coming out of Egypt, we're not going to change so fast. We're not saying there won't be servitude. There'll be servants. There'll be servants because that's nature. That's the way things were, at least till recently. Remember, Chumash wasn't only written for the 20th century, the 21st already. It was written for all centuries. But what are we doing? We're making a major stride in the way slaves are kept. Our slaves within our own society are servants, and even strangers, even a servant, even a non-Jewish servant. There's a difference between someone who worships idol worship, who's detrimental to society, but a stranger, what's called a gerto shahu, who accepts God, who accepts and lives with us, even though he's not Jewish, we have to treat him with full respect. Yeah? Ah, okay. That was my next thing. You guys you're answering perfect for me. And your questions are right on the mark. What was the first question? What I tried to show you was no one's lying. What Moshe told them was totally true. We are going to the desert to worship our God. Totally true. And he can't tell them the truth because there's no point in it. He wouldn't believe the truth. It's not a question of understanding. There's two things going on. Moshe is going to the desert to worship the God. Paro should give him the right to do that. They should have religious freedom. And Paro can be punished for not allowing him to do that. God has another thing. God runs the world in a different magal. The fact that God's ultimate plan is to bring us to Israel, it never says anywhere that we're supposed to go to Israel right away from there. Remember, lo nacham derech eretz plishtim. God didn't take us to Eretz Yisrael on the way to Israel. We went somewhere else. People don't know they're going to Israel. They know they don't know where they're going. They're kicked out. They follow blindly.
So why would this God feel the need to have them turn around and create this group of
pretending to stand in Israel? Okay, now, yeah. Okay, so these two questions I'll answer now. I'll start with this one because it's the funnest one, I think. Okay. What does God have to do? God has to fill Brit Beit HaTorim, which means what? He has to punish the Egyptians for the cruelty. Well, yeah, he has to punish them. And he has to give us what? Our back wages. But he has to do it legally. No. Wait. People get killed because they were bad. Listen, how are we going to get Rechush Gadol? God can allow the Jews to do what? To steal. And listen, both are going to answer them. What's God's master plan? How is he going to get Amis out of Egypt and legally get them the wealth? There's only one way to do it. What's his plan? He has to create a situation where what? Where the Egyptians will willingly give them their wares, right? But at the same time then declare war and take a lousy and do a bad and you follow what happened? God's creating a situation, and that's exactly the deeper reason for the double plan. Now take a look. Go back to Perek Gimel where we began. Remember in Perek Gimel where we began? Right where we began, in the end of Perek Gimel, where God tells Moshe, go tell Bnei Israel going to the promised land. Go tell Paro 3 days in the desert. Paro won't listen. Then he will listen. Then I'll bring my plagues. Then he will listen. And then you'll get your money. That's exactly his plan. He needs a situation. We have to create a situation where the Egyptians will be super eager to give him, to lend him whatever they ask for. How's that created? The Egyptians are begging, Jews, go worship your God. Go. And with full heart, take whatever you need. Now, what creates the situation the Egyptians are so willing to give the Jews their wares? Right? The plagues over and over again, the original warning that we have to go worship our God in the desert, that whole warning. You see what God does? No. God creates that situation, and it's through the plagues and through all that thing that God creates a situation where the Egyptians willingly lend them everything they need. Now, how do we keep it? At the same time, God has a maneuver to get them to, what do you call it? To get them to attack us, and then legally it becomes ours. Okay. And he'll tell you that we know on highway, on QEW, highway 4, I can pick up a highway here. Okay? On a certain highway, from here to here, over the course of the year, there's going to be 20 accidents with X amount of fatalities, this amount of people hurt, et cetera, et cetera. statistic. Correct? And usually they're right. Correct? Now, let's say there's a car accident and someone was, you know, driving whatever it was. And he sued. What can he say? What do you want from me? Right? I'm a statistic, right? There's bound to be X amount of accidents on the highway. The fact that we know statistically that there's bound to be 20 accidents on the highway, does that mean that every driver doesn't have the kirah chofshit, doesn't have freedom of choice to drive carefully? I'll explain what I want to do with the analogy. Throughout human history, without the history of mankind, what happens over and over and over again? People set up countries, and what happens in those countries? Dictators take over, tyrants take over, what do? They oppress the weak. They oppress whoever they can oppress. Isn't that happened throughout world history? Just read world history. It happens over and over again. God has expectations for mankind from the time he created man, from the flood, etc. God doesn't want that to happen. There's a theme in the Bible about God being unhappy with mankind developing. And for that reason, what does he do? He picks the Jew. First he tries a flood. Punch that way. Then we have Migdal Bavel, we try something else. What's he realize over in the first stories in Bereshit? Mankind, you leave them alone, like every parent knows with kids, you leave them alone, they're going to do something wrong. That's the nature of man. Ki yetzer Adam, ra minyurav. But God doesn't want that to be that way, but that seems to be the way man is. To do something about that, what does God do? He chooses Avraham Avinu to be what? To be a nation. What type of a nation? A nation that will set an example. As long as you have your Tanakhs there, leave your finger here in Perek Tetvav. Look at Haftarah for Parshat Bereshit. It's a beautiful pasuk from Yeshayahu, which summarizes everything we're talking about. Instead of a whole shiur, we'll just let Yeshayahu. It's the first Haftarah from Bereshit, page 1130. Not the time. 11:30. It's not by chance. It's a beautiful haftarah for Bereshit. Have it? Yishayo Perek Membet. That's okay. Page 1130 in the Art Scroll. Kol ma Hashem el Hashem borei shemayim va'aretz v'notehem rokat v'tzatzel notem nekem. We'll skip the first part. This is what he says next. Notem neshama la'amaleha v'rach lochim ba. What did God do? God gave a neshama to who? Not to a nation. Ruach. The neshama of Ruach. Why is this haftarah for Parshat Bereshit? Who got the neshama of Ruach? Adam in Gan Eden. When God makes Gan Eden, when God makes Adam in Gan Eden, it's neshama and Ruach. What does Yishayahu say? Yishayahu gives a beautiful parshanut on Sefer Bereshit. What's he saying? Not only did Adam get neshama and Ruach in Sefer Bereshit. What else got neshama v'ruach? Not only was man created, an am was created. And that's exactly the Ramban on Sefer Yetzirah, what he calls it Sefer Yetzirah. Yetzirah, not just of man, but of Am Yisrael. What's happening in Sefer Bereshit? God gives a neshama and ruach to a nation. For what purpose? Ani Hashem Pasuk Vav, Kraticha B'tzedek, I call upon you, to act righteous, V'chazek B'yadecha, V'tzarcha, he created you. Listen carefully now. V'tencha lebrit am lo'orgoyim. I made a covenant with you. I created a nation, just like you created man. I created a nation. I formed that nation. And I entered a covenant with that nation. For what purpose? To be a light to other nations. Got that idea? That's what Sefer Bereshit is about. And one of the key events in that covenantal process was Brit Ben Haftarim is the first covenant. For some reason, God is forecasting what's going to be here. Now, to support Yishayahu, let's go back to Bereshit again. Psukim, which I hope you know by heart, but I like to call Chai Chai. Or chapter 18, verse 18. But look in chapter 18, verse 18. Remember what happened? The three Melachim come to Abraham and Sodom. Remember, for three things. One, he's having a child, and then it's going to happen to Sodom. And they're on the way to destroy Sodom. And before they destroy Sodom, What does God do? Consults with Avraham Avinu. For some reason, he has got to tell Avraham Avinu what's going to happen to Sodom. What was Sodom doing wrong? What was so bad about Sodom? According to Yechezkel and all the prophets, Sodom was a corrupt society where the wealthy and the rich took advantage of the poor. Okay? Yechezkel says, Mufurash, what was wrong? It was a beautiful land, and they couldn't care less about the poor and the needy. Okay? Now, we'll start from Pasuk Yud-Zayin. Chapter 18, what's page 80? 81, 80, page 80 at the bottom. Vashem Amar Mechatani Avram Asher Niyoseh. He's going to hide from Avram what I'm doing. Pasuk Yud Chet now. Chai Chai. Vavraham. Hayo Yeh Legoy Gadol. Does that sound familiar? Goy Gadol is exactly the beginning of Lech Lecha. Page 82 now. Vatsu. V'nivruchu V'akol Goy Ha'aretz. Why was Avram chosen? To be a great nation, to become a blessing for other nations. But how is that supposed to happen? Ki dativ, meaning, because I gave him a debt, that's what I called Yud before. Okay? Because I've come to know him for a purpose, Laman. I've entered a relationship with Avraham Avinu for what purpose? Asher yitzaved banav et beito acharav, v'shamru derech Hashem lasot tzedakah u'mishpat, Laman avi Hashem al Avraham et asher diber elav. What's God's master plan? He's going to have a nation, and this nation will do what? Will have a Masorah, a tradition, a character, of doing tzedakah u'mishpat, and not only as individuals, but as a nation, on a national level, they'll be located in this location with high visibility on the crossroads of the Middle East, and in doing so, if they're acting and following God's laws properly, that God will give them a Matan Torah, hopefully, they'll set an example that other nations can learn from. God can't save Sodom, why? If there's 10 tzaddikim, what can the 10 tzaddikim do? They can have an effect on the rest of the city. But Lot alone can't have an effect. God will save Lot, but Lot can't have Ashpa'ah, can't have any influence on the people. Right, in the time of Avram, because he's not a nation yet, Avram can't save Sodom, because he doesn't have a nation to set an example. But now that Yitzchak is going to be born, what tradition does Avram have to teach Yitzchak? You're going to become a nation. You have to pass over to your new son, who I just told you about. And he'll tell his children, we have a national goal one day to become a nation that's going to be a model nation for other nations to follow. And for that purpose, I've set aside a land, etc. Now, at the same time, what does God tell Avram, or earlier, Brit Ben of Tarim, when he's planning this whole idea of a nation? He's not saying that this is going to happen in this year, this peril is going to do something. I think Brit Ben of Tarim, Yodol Tida is saying, this is bound to happen. Because why? That's what always happens. You're going to be living in a foreign land, and what are they going to do to you? They're going to take advantage of you, because everyone does that. That's going to happen to you. But you're going to be a stranger in a foreign land, and they're going to take advantage of you. And you're going to suffer, because I like many nations suffer. And I'm going to come and save you, take you out, and I'll get your money back when it's all over. I'll keep my promise. And then you're going to become a nation. And what are you going to do as a nation? What's God want you to do as a nation? Set an example. Now, to prove that, just read 4 or 5 psukim. Parshat Mishpatim. We talked about that this morning, those over there. Look in Perek Chabet and Parshat Mishpatim. Find me the page. 420, do you want here? Okay, yeah, start, get to 430. Page 430, chapter 22, verse 20. Example number one. V'ger lo toneh v'lo techetzena, ki gerim ha'item v'eretz Mitzrayim. What's that mean? Don't take advantage of a stranger, don't cheat him. Can't do it to anybody, but it's easy to do it to a stranger. Why? Again, page 430, verse 20. Perechav bet pasat chav. Page 430. V'ger lo toneh v'lo techetzena, ki gerim ha'item v'eretz Mitzrayim. What's God telling the people? You just went out of Egypt a couple months ago. You're about to go to your land. When you become a country, don't take advantage of a stranger. What do you mean because you were stranger? He's going to say no. I'm going to bring plagues. He'll say yes, and then you get rechush gadol. Before the plagues start, we have the same thing here in Yud Aleph. Pasuk bet. V'daber na bosnei am v'shalu ish mit re'eu v'ish mit ruuta chesu chesav. V'ten shem chena b'nei mitzrayim v'gam ish moshe v'chulei. Right after the negotiations ended, remember? Perikil was the end of the negotiations. Perikil, right before the 10th plague again, we bring up what topic? Now we're ready for Rechush Gadol. But the Rechush Gadol goes hand in hand with the 3 days in the desert and the double plan. I think there's something to that. I think that's, again, and it worked nicely as a plan. But the plot's complicated, and it's late night to go over it. But what I wanted to point out tonight is the complex plan behind it, the complexity of the story, the triple plot going on, and the technicalities of it. And it relates later to why we rushed out the whole, why they rushed this out, how that whole thing happened. Okay, real quick questions, and then afterwards I'll be around for questions afterwards because some people have to go home. Yeah. Okay, now. Yeah. Now, there's always a question in the Bible when they say everything, everyone got, does it really mean everybody? Like everybody, they were always saying, like, everybody missed davening. Doesn't mean everybody, it means half the place. Everyone's talking during Chazar Shashat. Doesn't mean everybody, there's two or three tzaddikim who don't, but everyone's talking. People talk the way Chumash talks that way sometimes. Now, who was, in general, in the world in general, if there's a plague in a country, that's what happens in the road. If the person in charge of the water system messes up in his job, everyone drinks poison water, and people who didn't mess up suffer for it. And if we didn't, we were also killed. Again, I'm not saying the text talks about that in a very general way because that's not the topic. The text of the topic isn't why God the topic of Shmot is not why bad things happen to good people and why innocent little children die and things like that. That's the way the world happens also. But there's a deeper question here, which has to do with collective punishment from God, is that when people know that if you're misbehaving, that innocent people will die because of your behavior. There's a switch that happens in people's heads. People say, if I did something, I get punished, fine. But if because of what I'm doing, innocent people get killed, that leads to a higher level of awareness and sensitivity, maybe you're not doing something bad. But when you know, if you're in charge of, say, some health system, and if you mess up, innocent people will die, then you'll be more careful in your job. But there's a lot of depth behind that. That if people know that if you as a nation do something bad, not only you're going to be punished, but the whole nation might be punished because of that. Again, that might not sound good, but that's the way the world works. So that's the way it works here also. Yeah. Chapter 16, verse 48. Yeah, 16, 48, and 49. Don't say that. The Yad Adi v'Yom Lo Yichzika.
Okay, I'm going to take a prerogative and cut off our public section of the question.
Yeah.
It is 10 o'clock.
Okay.
I'm glad there's a lot of interest, and Rabbi Liptak is here. There's oranges and refreshments and cake. Before you go, if I can have 1 minute. If people have not signed in and you're not on any of our mailing list, email list, we would appreciate it if you could. I know a lot of people here are, but I can recognize a lot of people are not. So we would greatly appreciate that. It makes it a lot easier to let you know about our programs, etc. If anybody would like CDs of this evening or of the morning, which is a wonderful program, we'll have them before Pesach. We'll have them prior to Pesach. So if you want stuff at the Seder, etc. I want to thank Rabbi Liptak, who's on his way in a couple of days. He'll be in Boston at the Soloveitchik Institute. He'll be teaching a lot of their students. The whole program they have, the reason I mention it, because next Sunday, the dean of the Soloveitchik Institute, Rabbi J.J. Schechter, will be here. He's a wonderful, wonderful speaker, scholar, one of the leading rabbis, really, in the North American scene. He'll be here at 9:30 Sunday morning, speaking on 800 years of the Rambam, the 800th year since his yahrzeit. He died in 1204. So he's extremely qualified, a Harvard PhD, and combined with his learning, his smicha. So I do welcome you to come. You can come and learn for an hour and a half, and you can clean afterwards. Anyway, so that's a bit. I want to thank Rabbi Liebtag and thank all of you for staying. And if I don't see you, achak kasher, isameach, and we'll speak to you.